Good evening and a very warm welcome to Tate Modern. My name's Catherine Wood, I'm curator of contemporary art and performance here, and we give a very warm welcome to Carl Andre this evening, who we're delighted to have here for this very rare opportunity to hear him read his poetry. We were trying to work out when the last time that he'd done a reading was, and we thought, well, by popular consent in the research I've been doing, that it was in Oxford in 1975. Actually in a show that I think Nick Sirota curated, in fact. And afterwards, in the process of reading, Carl's going to discuss the poems as we go along with Richard Cork, who, as I'm sure you all know, is an award-winning critic, art historian and broadcaster. And they've known each other for some time, so they'll talk as we go, and then there'll be an opportunity to ask questions at the end. Although Carl's reading here today is rare, of course his work's incredibly familiar in Britain, worldwide, but particularly here since Tate bought his sculpture Equivalent 8, popularly known as The Bricks, in 1976. And his work's been pretty much consistently on display at Tate ever since then. And there are two key pieces in the collection displays at the moment in the Idea and Object wing, one that forms quite a dramatic entrance, Venus Forge from 1980, and Steel's Ink Plane from 1969. The poems, of course, shouldn't be taken as an interpretation of the sculpture, but as an equivalent. And the use of words, beginning with his first five poems, which focused on single words, beginning with the word green, were used as a kind of equivalent to blocks of wood or bricks or steel plates, and focused on the kind of singular materiality of the word, going against metaphor or the usual grammatical or syntactical structures that we would expect in language. Carl himself said that whole poems, his approach involved the idea that whole poems are made out of the many single poems that we call words. And I noticed when reading about Carl's work in the run-up to this talk that lots of writers and other artists have dealt with his own work, his own sculpture, through linguistic metaphors. Rosalind Krauss said that Carl's sculptures reflect an intransitive state, materials perceived as expressions of their own being. And the painter Gerhard Richter described minimalist sculpture as a way of building an alphabet for the future. But, you know, conversely, the sculptures, the poems focus on singularity, takes away that kind of metaphor. And I was thinking the first five poems particularly have evolved into much more complex configurations as we're here tonight. But, you know, in their first instance in 1960, were like a kind of radical materialist reinvention of the idea, very familiar in Western culture, that in the beginning was the word, but from a very different starting point. I just wanted to end before Carl begins to read with a quotation that I really liked from Robert Smithson, who said, "Carl Andre's writings bury the mind under rigorous incantatory arrangements. Such a method smothers any reference to anything other than the words. Thoughts are crushed into a rubble of syncopated vowels." So, Carl, over to you.
Good evening. Thank you for coming. Unfortunately, I've been thinking today, as this event approached, that is my poetry worth my fly across the Atlantic and you're coming across London to be exposed to it. I cannot ever determine that myself. It's for other people, I guess. I'll be reading from a kind of book called Lyrics and Odes, which are poems that I have written from the late 50s to the early 80s, mostly. My poetry falls into more or less three categories. There are the sort of the normal poems, which can be read by one voice. And then there is the poems which are in more than one voice and are read simultaneously by more than one voice. And then there are poems which really can't be read at all, not usefully, because they essentially form patterns of words and not to be vocalized, but to be seen as visual patterns. But these are all poems which are of the more traditional kind. The first, there are four very short poems, a form which I have always been drawn to because I'm perhaps very lazy, but anyway, a short poem. I like them. I like haikus and tankas and things of that sort, and they're very, very difficult to write well. Anyway, I'll begin. The fox is courtesy. He walks a dun red pocked carnation in his jaws. Eat what you kill. A man carrying a saxophone. A man carrying a saxophone under his arm on Washington Park, an old man. Given Journal Square, given Journal Square, a flight of stairs, a fat girl, her labor in climbing, an aluminum stick, the sound of two voices, a black man, his cataracts. Ninth Street stop, Hudson Tubes, four boys, hard, white, fatless, white cartilage, sniff model glue from paper bags in 9-year fists like white stones. Okay, those are short ones.
Carl, maybe I could start by asking you about the origins of those.
They were all experiences, recounting actual experiences.
They really sound like that.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, I mean, they're like you. I was going to say in the big city, but the first one doesn't sound like the big city at all.
The fox, no, that was from Cape Cod, definitely.
Yeah, but the other ones,
yeah.
They're like you kind of traveling through mm-hmm. New York or...
New York and New Jersey. I worked in the railroad for between 1960 and 1965, I think, in New Jersey. And the Hudson Tubes are a underground line that connects New Jersey to Manhattan.
And you would have a notebook with you? You would have a pen?
Oh, no. These were all recollected in
travel. Oh, okay. Yeah. So there's no notes?
No, because it's... I mean, these are images that for some reason stuck with me, so the only way I could get rid of them was to, you know, write them down in some way.
Yeah, yeah. But you were also making art at the same time. You were making sculpture at the same time.
That's curious. I probably started writing poetry consciously when I was 8 or 9, because poetry was something normal to my family. My mother wrote poetry, and my father would, when I was a small boy, take me on his lap and read to me Byron, Shelley, and Keats.
Really?
And
amazing.
He'd be sipping a little glass of sherry or port and occasionally giving me a nip to keep my interest up. And so...
What about American poets? What about Whitman or something like that?
Well, of course, I was aware of them, but in our house, it was more or less the classic romantics, I think.
So he wouldn't read American poetry to you?
No.
No, okay.
No. So now the poems get longer. I hope we don't regret that too much. The first one is about the first woman I ever loved. And like all first loves, they're fugitive, certainly. And so This poem has a title. Many of my poems do not, but this one is called Susanna in Italy. No viola, no guitar, but try the shrill of Sopranino, try the sting of nettle weed, weed that feeds on chalk of Caesars. I have eaten at your heart the white blood of a countless man, and I have licked the enemies of art upon the plains of circumstance. Compass lily, compass rose, upon the slopes of circumstance, I have eaten Ganymede. Now, 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 let the ages fall in one sum total on psychopompous prow. Let ages and indifference fall a sea foam from your brow. No viola, no guitar, but memory and instrument is tuned to certain vowels in unloud song. Crap, shit, piss, these we have not gathered, flowers all to flies alighting. No viola, no guitar, but one note falls, the pure assigned gentleman pulls down the shades. I also wrote poems about poets and such people that inspired me, and these poems, I think, pretty much, perhaps not this one, but many of them, I stopped depending on the delicacy of my own sentiments and started collaging poems from the texts of these people whom I admired, and using those as sort of quarrying for raw material. Some of these will be like that. I don't think this one is. This one is called Fragment on a Ruin, Hart Crane. Hart Crane is one of the great American avant-garde poets of the 20th century. And he lived a tortured life. He was a homosexual, and that tormented him. And he finally fell in love with a woman for the first time, and for some reason that tormented him too, and he jumped off the back of a freighter crossing the Gulf of Mexico, coming back from Mexico. And Hart Crane wrote some magnificent poetry, and he also attempted to write an American epic poem called The Bridge. And it's not considered to be a success, but I myself, I must say, had the ambition to write an epic poem about America. Of course, I never have done that. But the example of Hart Crane's attempt was there. But this is Fragment on a Ruin, Hart Crane. This he extolled, bold, erect, long laughter, trances, heat, alcohol, trances gotten at the hellish exit. Remembered seamen gone oceanwards, dance and tumble, dance and wheel, no dirges sung. Pale Apaches teach children his ecstatic, sensual music. Emblems and signs tell how one uneasy grandeur hired its damnation, records of perils, poisons, enticed dangers, dances on water. Now the heavy exegete keeps neat, essential ledgers, lectures on fancy and symbol. Poets expound no truths. Days and years, totems of wind and name, draw eager readers to his end. Critics attesting to his exemplary death read a little lyric and write new formulations, revelations of metrical precision, if tending to omit cock relished under Christ's inspection, fiery, inhuman, xeric. This next poem is called A Song, and it's in a much lighter vein, I suppose, than most of my poetry is, but A Song. I dressed my child in money rags and sent him whistling to the struggle, and he took cold about the knees, then I made warm with silver coins, but he was long in warming to the metal and his cold knees were long and warming to the metal. I dressed my child in money rags and sent him whistling to the struggle, and he took hunger in the belly that I filled up with folding money, but he was little sated by the paper, and his belly was not sated by the paper. I dressed my child in money rags and sent him whistling to the struggle, and he took wounds about the heart that I sewed up with golden threads, but he is slow in healing to the metal, and his still heart is slow in healing to the metal. I was fascinated by certain individuals. One of them was Charles Lindbergh, because he, of the solo flight across the Atlantic, was the first great American media and publicity hero. His fame quite outran his accomplishment of flying across the Atlantic, but he was a very interesting man and lived out his life after that doing numerous valuable scientific and cultural contributions to the general society, which are not very well known. I mean, it's Lucky Lindy flying across the Atlantic. He hated Lucky Lindy, by the way, because he was a very carefully prepared man, and he was not going to fail on that flight. He had covered every... He hated being called Lucky Lindy. But this is Charles Lindbergh. He was clean cut and straightforward at all times. I found the man in him at an engine speed of 1,300 revolutions per minute. Here's a little poem about Norman Mailer. Far less of an idol for me, but certainly someone who has works I admire. Of Norman Mailer. Year, a time I remember well because the army, and I muttered in 1941, and it won first prize. Deal of money in a hurry. I remember Brooklyn streets, or my mother and father, or from the guts, literally, I gave. Publishers, self-analysis, marijuana, my private Mexico. Now that I was done, I could remember people. Here's another Hart Crane poem. It's just in parentheses, Hart Crane. And this is perhaps the first of these poems in which these are all shattered images from, I believe, the letters of Hart Crane, and just shattered shards, words, phrases, broken phrases. Nothing longer than that. Nothing that would make sense if you read the extract. It's just something I'm putting together. They are my hoodoos to my gift of some roses until 12 or after, behind our pipes and lying in the sun. Our bodies have requirements also. I shall have an organ for all of my melodies, wood fire, and talk science, twice saved in very dangerous falls. Lord and devil is no pleasure of the animal, an organic world which I cannot swallow, and father's sex life and troubles, and see the moon and stars and hear the frogs as a woman lover, Slavs and Jews, be Kansas City, France, or even New York. Laid in the Sultan's bed for the Tsar, defunct of Russia, gold and purple, dust and gold, his half-oriental eyes, slippery, scales of the fish, continual. Here's a poem in a very, very utterly different mode and also a different mood. It's called M.M., and some years ago, that would be understood to be Marilyn Monroe, but it's Marilyn Monroe. Telephone, overdoses of, come here, I want you, Betty Jean. Radio, nothing on but the dog food. 40 megatons, candy, chocolate, covered not in your hand, in your mouth. Squalling and suckling pigs, a sack, jungle, silver screens. Sailors, clippers, Arthur Millers, dark glasses. Clothes, take off your milk and money. Strip bare the bride of her calendars. Grushenka, garment, death as a prey on us, Watson, Earth, Mother. Also, my poems, historical events, certain ones have also fascinated me, and I've been drawn to them. And this poem titled 1859 refers to the raid that John Brown led a group of fanatic abolitionists on the Federal Army in Harper's Ferry, West Virginia, I believe. And his purpose, John Brown, who was a fanatic abolitionist before the Civil War, his intention was to take arms from the Harper's Ferry Federal Arsenal and distribute them to the slaves in the South so there could be a slave uprising. But John Brown and his small band of men were very easily thwarted in this effort, and they were captured by a company of Marines under the command of, unbelievably, Robert E. Lee, who later became the leading Confederate general in the Civil War, which followed 2 years later. Anyway, this is about 1859 and the sort of the mood of tension in the country immediately before the Civil War. White men, crimson cross on the settled by territory, very large black, coal black, and his hair is no rites which magnify the happiness